Recording in progress.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for coming out. What a beautiful day, huh? It's now officially spring, as of a couple days ago. And spring is always a very promising season. And it comes around again every year. No matter what the human world is doing and thinks is important, it doesn't matter. Spring keeps coming. And at our house this year, there's tulips that are really spectacular, very gorgeous. And I want to welcome Arhelia, who is here from Mexico, and maybe one or two others. Nice to see you, Arhelia. So today we're going to finish our reading of Dogen's essay, Refrain from Unwholesome Action, Sho Aku Makusa. We've been talking about it. This is the third week. We're finishing it this week. And the last 2 weeks we were talking about the three pure precepts: refrain from unwholesome action, do good action, and purify the mind. And we went through Dogen's ways of understanding those precepts. And now we get to the end where he tells a story. And usually Dogen's essays are about the story. You know, he thinks of a story and then sometimes he tells a story in the beginning, but more often he goes into detail about his take on the story and then tells you the story at the end, as he does here. So here's the story, and I'll just read it in little parts with comments. Baijui of the Tang Dynasty was the lay student of Rumon Zen master Fuguang and the Dharma, I think it means who was a Dharma descendant of Matsu, Zen master Daji of Jiangxi. So obviously we don't need to remember all of that, but what is important is that Bazhuyi was a Zen student. He had been studying Chan for a long time under a Zen master. And I apologize for another one of my mistakes. I'm always so sure that I know what I'm talking about, and I'm so often wrong. Last week, I said that the poet was Su Dongbo in this story, but it's not Su Dongbo. Su Dongbo lived about 100 years later in the Song Dynasty. The poet in question here is Bazhui, who was as important and as famous in Chinese history of Chinese poet as Su Dongbo was. So he was Dogen says next, when he was the governor of Hang province, he studied with Zen master Daolin of Niakui. So he was the governor of this province and I guess far away from his original teacher, so there was a Zen teacher there and he studied with that teacher. I've always been impressed when I first heard about this. It just amazed me that Chinese poets were typically government officials. The fact that he was the government of Hang is not at all unusual. Many Chinese poets were government officials because in China, it made perfect sense to everyone that if you wanted to be a government official, you know, administering and taking care of other people, you should be very good at language and you should be adept in the cultural tradition of your universe, and this would make you educated and sensitive to other people. So it was very natural for poets to be government officials, and training in poetry was one of the curriculum items that you needed to study in order to be a government official. So all government officials wrote poetry, whether they were poets or not. And many poets were government officials. And it's interesting to me because it's pretty much the opposite here, right? You would never, no poet would ever be a government official, you know? And nobody would ever think that poetry had anything to do with anything at all, let alone administering a province. So it's kind of like the opposite cultural praxis of poetry. So this master that he went to study with in Hang province was Daolin, who was otherwise known, Dogen doesn't say this, but otherwise he was known as the Bird's Nest Roshi. And I've mentioned the story of him before. This Dogen abbreviates the story somewhat, but the Bird's Nest Roshi was called that because, depending on how which version of the story you read, he either did zazen up in a treehouse, in a tree, or he literally did zazen like in an abandoned eagle's nest or something. And the idea was that this was a very precarious, dangerous thing to do. So we can imagine that maybe he's sitting up there in the bird's nest and Juri is down below questioning him, but Dogen doesn't say any of that, so I don't know, that particular angle, which to me is the best part of the story, doesn't figure into Dogen's version at all. So Juri says to him, "What is the essential meaning of Buddha Dharma?" Which is the question, one way or another, that everybody always asks, because what other question is there, right? And Daolin said, "Refrain from unwholesome action, do wholesome action." And Juri said, "Well, even a three-year-old child knows that." So Juri, being a profound poet and a literary person, was definitely looking for some kind of profound koan-like answer from this great Zen master, some answer that he could contemplate and chew on and think about and, you know, go deep with. So he was very disappointed, you know, to receive this very pedestrian answer that sounded to him like some kind of simple-minded religious instruction that you would give to a child. Certainly totally unworthy of this profound Zen master, and by the way, also unworthy of him. And, you know, not somehow taking his question very seriously. So Daolin responded to him and said, "A three-year-old child may know this, but even an 80-year-old person can't practice it." And that's the end of the story. Zhu Yi bows and leaves. So in this last line, Daolin is telling Zhu Yin that this teaching, which he thinks is so simple-minded, is much more profound than it appears to be. And Dogen is now going to go on and discuss the story. But of course, we know, Zhu Yi doesn't know this, but we know at this point in the essay how profound it is, you know, refrain from and do good and purify the mind, because Dogen has said all this stuff about it, right? That kind of made us realize, whoa, you know, there's a lot more to this than we thought. Now he's going to talk about Juri's understanding. So Dogen goes on, "Juri, a descendant of General Bai, was an extraordinary poet. He was regarded as a man of letters who had lived 24 lifetimes as a poet. He was sometimes called Manjushri or Maitreya. There was no place he was not known, and no place his writing did not circulate." And it's true, he was super famous and remains super famous. "However," Dogen says, "he was a beginner and a latecomer in the Buddha way. It seems that he had never dreamed of the true meaning of refrain from unwholesome action and do wholesome action. He thought that Daolin presented this phrase in a merely intellectual way. Juri had not heard and did not know that refrain from unwholesome action and do wholesome action are teachings of the Buddha way, which are thousands and myriads of years old and apply to now and then. He responded in the way he did because he was not standing in the Buddha Dharma and did not understand the Buddha Dharma." Well, this is a little surprising because, you know, in the beginning we learned that Juri was a very experienced Dharma person. And so he was not a latecomer and a beginner, the way Dogen calls him. But this is Dogen criticizing Juri for what he considers his total misunderstanding of Dharma. So I think probably Juri had a very sound understanding of Dharma according to the, you know, conventions of the time. But Dogen takes him to task anyway, as he does many other Zen masters from time to time. And, you know, this made me think, you know, I never thought of this before, but I wonder whether Dogen was aware that his, or considered that his understanding of Zen was unusual and that not everybody shared it, or did he think that it was the usual understanding of Zen, but just a lot of people had missed it? It's hard to know, you know, how unusual Dogen would have appeared. But he did have a lot of people who he took to task as having the wrong idea. And maybe he didn't really disagree with them so much as want to use their views, maybe as straw men, you know, to articulate his own. Anyway, I don't know the answer to that. So Dogen is saying that Juri dismissed Daolin's answer because he thought that Daolin was just giving this simple moral stricture which says that you should intentionally just practice refraining from unwholesome action and intentionally practice do good action. Dogen doesn't want to say that these two practices are not intentional. He doesn't want to say that we should not understand them in that way. But he does want to say that practicing these precepts goes far beyond our intentions. It's not just a matter of our intentions. They are vast and cosmic, and they include our intentions, but they're not limited to our intentions. That's sort of what he has been saying in the earlier part of the essay. And that's what he's implying when he says he doesn't understand that these precepts are the teachings of the Buddha way that carry throughout space and time. They're way bigger than the intentions of any individual. So in the following section, Dogen goes into this point further. He says this: even if you caution against doing unwholesome action by intention and encourage doing wholesome action by intention, you actualize refrain from. On the whole, in the Buddha Dharma, what you first hear from a teacher and what you finally achieve are the same. This is called genuine from head to tail. It is also called inconceivable cause, inconceivable effect, or Buddha cause, Buddha effect. Cause and effect in the Buddha way is neither a heterogeneous maturing nor a homogeneous stream. Since this is so, without Buddha cause, Buddha effect cannot be experienced. Because Daolin expressed this essential teaching, it was Buddha Dharma. So there's a little bit of the heterogeneous maturing and homogeneous stream is a little bit in the weeds of technical issues around the Buddhist analysis of cause and effect. But what Dogen, so, you know, I don't know, we will get into all that, but the main point I think is important. He's saying that, okay, on the one hand, yes, when we practice the three pure precepts intentionally, as we, this is how we study them and how we practice them, yeah, I know what it means to refrain from doing bad stuff, and I'm not going to do that. And if I mess up, I'll know I messed up. And sometimes we do. He's saying, good, you know, we should certainly do that. But the next thought, and he's saying that when we do that, we're going beyond what we can see. It's bigger than, the question is bigger than what we can see. Then he says, in a little complex way, he's contrast, because intentional doing of good or refraining from evil, those are classical karmic acts which involve our intentions. If you knock somebody over because you fell down, it's not a karmic act because you didn't intend it. But if you intend to knock them down, it's a karmic act because intention matters in ordinary cause and effect. But here he's saying that in Buddha cause and effect, there's something else at work. Because Buddhas are beyond cause and effect, because they completely merge with cause and effect. They are cause and effect. And then he's saying that when you hear this teaching from a Buddha, in other words, when you encounter a Buddha, you probably don't understand it, but you hear it, and then later in the course of your practice, you do understand it, which is to say, you do come to live it exactly as you heard it in the first place. You do, so you hear the teacher's teachings, you hear them, but you don't really know how to understand them or put them into practice. Later on you do, and then you merge with the original cause. In ordinary cause and effect, the effect is different from the cause. That's why it says it's heterogeneous. In Buddha cause and effect, the cause and the effect are simultaneous, reversible, and completely illuminated. This, according to Dogen, is what Daolin was saying to Xue Yi, who didn't hear it. He only heard it in a limited way, and that's why he said, well, this is a very simple-minded teaching. He didn't hear what Daolin was really saying. Even so, the implication here, Dogen doesn't say this directly, but the implication is that Xue Yi, since he heard it, will eventually realize it. So Dogen is saying here, when he's talking about Buddha cause and effect, or inconceivable cause and inconceivable effect, he's saying that the Buddha is the cause of awakening. So we might think, oh, I am intending to do the practice. It's me applying my effort. I'm getting the benefit out of it. If I don't get any benefit out of it, I screwed up. I didn't do it right. But he's saying, no, actually, your intentions matter, but it doesn't have to do with that. The cause of your awakening is not your effort. It's the Buddha. The Buddha is the cause of awakening, and awakening is the cause of Buddha, because cause and effect are homogeneous in the case of Buddha cause and effect. So it's kind of a beautiful thought. I mean, in a way, it both lets us off the hook and it doesn't. You know, yes, we do have to make effort. We have to exercise our intention. We have to show up and do stuff. But really and truly, it's not up to us. The real cause and the real engine of our practice is the Buddha, whose illuminated presence is everywhere, throughout us and throughout the world. That's, I think, what he's saying in that passage. Even if unwholesome action fills worlds upon worlds and swallows up all things upon all things, refrain from is still emancipation. And we were talking about this last week, and I don't know if I said this exactly, but it's one of the things that is so uplifting about the Dharma. Because it's saying that even in a world full of evil action, a world that seems to be totally overcome with evil action, so you can't see anything good in it, even so, to practice, refrain from, or I think that stands for all the precepts, to practice, refrain from, is to be free and effective for the good within that world. So you never have to be discouraged or downtrodden by evil, difficult, negative circumstances. It doesn't make any difference at all. Doing good, refraining from evil, and purifying the mind is always effective and always liberating, no matter what condition the world is in. So that's wonderful, right? I mean, you know, if you think about that, you can have some sense of, you still might think, well, this is, the conditions of the world are really terrible, and if there's any objective way that I can improve them, you would certainly would do that, and that would come under the category of due wholesome action. But regardless, you would know that your action is effective and that the world will eventually change. Dogen goes on, wholesome action is wholesome action in the beginning, middle, and end. It is the true essence, marks, substance, and activity of do as it is. Because Zhu Yi did not follow this track, he said, even a three-year-old can say this. Lacking the capacity for true expression, he uttered these words. So maybe you've heard this phrase before, good in the beginning, good in the middle, good in the end. It's often said of Dharma. Dharma is good in the beginning. It's good when you start in the very beginning. It's good in the middle as you're going along. And it's good in the end when you fully exercise it and fully live it. So in a sense, this means there's no progress and no attainment. Since it's good from the very start, you're not really getting more good. It's always good. And that's true also of wholesome action. It's always good. It's good in the beginning, it's good in the middle, and it's good in the end. As soon as you practice this precept, it's already complete, meaning sentient beings are already receiving the benefit of your goodness when you practice this precept. So Zhu Yi, according to Dogen, didn't see this point, so he disparaged what he thought Dalin was saying. And there's got to be a little drop of irony, at least a drop, in Dogen's saying of one of the greatest poets in the history of China that he lacked the capacity for true expression. Although, from the point of view of Dharma, a great poet is just making nice ornaments and, you know, greeting cards if they're not expressing the truth. And then Dogen goes on, what a pity. Now he's really letting him have it. What a pity. Why do you say this? He's addressing Zhu Yi. Why do you say this? Because you have not touched upon Buddha wind, which is that wind is a teaching. You know, that's a wonderful expression. Like the wind of the house usually means like the style of teaching. The Soto wind of the house is... they say, careful attention to details, which I'm very bad at, but nevertheless. You have not touched upon Buddha wind. Do you know about a three-year-old child? Do you understand the principle of a child's inherent capacity? Those who understand know that a three-year-old child also understands all Buddhas in the three worlds. How can those who cannot understand all Buddhas in the three worlds understand a three-year-old child? Do not think that to face a person is to understand a person. Do not think that not to face a person is not to understand a person. So now Dogen takes one of his famous swerves, you know, kind of surprises us here. Because when Zhu Yi says, you know, not even a three-year-old child knows this, he's not really talking about a three-year-old child. You know, he's saying anybody knows this. You know, everybody knows this. He isn't really specifically talking about a three-year-old child, but Dogen takes it very literally and says, you say that even a three-year-old child knows this because she learned it in Sunday school, and you say this as if you think a three-year-old child is ignorant. But actually, a three-year-old child understands the Dharma better than a Zen master. Every three-year-old child understands the Dharma better than a Zen master. And a real Zen master, unlike you, would know this and want to study with any three-year-old child. And that's what Zhao Zhou said when he was when he went on his pilgrimage at the age of 60. He said, I'm going to go on pilgrimage. If I meet a child of 7 years old, I'll study who knows the Dharma, I'll study with her. And if I meet a Zen master of 100 who knows the Dharma, I'll study with that Zen master. So then he says to Zhu Yi, don't think that to face a person is to understand a person. Don't think that not to face a person is not to understand a person. I think he means that, you know, we're interacting with each other all the time, but are we really seeing each other? Right? Do we really know who each other is? Probably not. Probably not. To see a person is not necessarily to really see them. Probably Zhu Yi had seen a lot of three-year-olds, but maybe he didn't really see any three-year-olds. If he had understood the Dharma, understood his own true self, then he would have known a three-year-old child, even if he never saw one. Because to understand one thing is to understand everything. Dogen goes on to make this point more strongly. Those who understand a speck of dust understand the entire world. Those who master one thing master myriad things. Those who do not master myriad things do not master anything. Because those who study mastering see myriad things as well as one thing through penetration, those who study a speck of dust simultaneously study the entire world. So we don't know, we don't need to know a lot of stuff, and we don't need to have lots of experiences. Whatever is in front of us is complete. Our life is full and complete at all points, and everything we need is right there. You don't need to go looking for something more. Just to see one thing is enough. And this is very comforting to me because I realize that the course of aging and dying involves the closing down of the world. And people say, oh no, you know, I can't go here anymore, and I can't go there anymore, and I can't learn this, and I can't do that. But what Dogen is saying is that that doesn't matter. Just, I think Frank is here. Frank, I remember so many times Frank saying, you know, this, that being with patients in hospice, and they would like get in the sheets of the bed, and the sheets would be, this is a famous thing that Frank said many times, the sheets would be cool. And that would be like, that's all they needed, you know? That's like everything. They understood everything. They don't need more than that. Now, to be sure, if you can run around and do a bunch of things, you should do it, you know? But don't think that you need to do those things. Just do it because you can and because it's given to you. But if you can't do it, all of a sudden, whatever you can do is everything. So that's good news, right? Saves a lot of money. Airfare. Then he says, it is extremely foolish to assume that a three-year-old child cannot express Buddha Dharma, and that what a three-year-old child says is easy. The real issue here, to clarify birth and death, is the great matter of causes and effects in the Buddha house. So that's what it says on the Han that we strike, that calling us to the Zendo. It says, birth and death is the great matter. Impermanence is swift, don't waste time. Cause and effect seems clear superficially. I want something, I do this, I get it. Cause and effect. But it's much more profound than that. Cause and effect itself is impermanence, and cause and effect itself is the Buddha, cause in itself effect is the one great matter, the one great matter of birth and death. That's the whole of the Dharma. Each and everything we meet, including a three-year-old child, is always expressing this. Everywhere you look, every moment is this expression. An old master said, back to Dogen, when you are born, you have the capacity to roar like a lion. The capacity to roar like a lion is a virtue of the Tathagata turning the Dharma wheel. It is turning the Dharma wheel. Another old master said, the coming and going of birth and death is the true human body. So Dogen is saying, you know, to be alive, our birthright is to be Buddha. This is our birthright. This is what we really are. To be alive in this bright world of impermanence is to be alive in what he calls the true human body, the Buddha body, the impermanent body. And it's glorious as it changes and goes back into the dust. It's a fantastic human body. In this way, to Dogen, in this way, to clarify the true human body and to have the virtue of roaring like a lion are indeed the great matter and are not to be taken lightly. For this reason, to understand the words and practice of a three-year-old child is a great matter of causes and conditions. This is sometimes the same and sometimes not the same as the words and practice of all Buddhas in the three worlds. So, according to our practice, our job, this is the human job. Our practice asserts that the human job, what it means to be born as a human being, is to clarify what this life is actually about. That's why we're here. And we're all doing it. Everybody's doing it. By being born and living their life, they're doing that. And we're all expressing it. Everybody is. The three-year-old is, and the 83-year-old is. When he says this is sometimes the same and sometimes not the same as words and practices of the Buddha, I think he means both that at the same time we are Buddha and we are ordinary human beings every moment. And I think he means also that sometimes we are completely Buddha. We really are Buddha. And sometimes we are really stupid human beings. The same person is sometimes a Buddha and sometimes later a stupid human being. In other words, we're not always the same. You know, we think, I'm this way, I'm that way. No, we're not this way or that way. Sometimes we're this way, sometimes we're that way. We're different in different conditions. Next paragraph of Dogen. Because Zhuyi was ignorant and had never heard the expression of the three-year-old child, without even questioning it, he responded as he did. He did not even hear Daolin's voice of the way, which was louder than thunder. He wanted to point out that Daolin failed to hit the mark, and he said, even a three-year-old child knows this. In this way, he failed to hear the lion's roar of the child and missed the turning Dharma wheel of the Zen master. Daolin pitied him, still Dogen. Daolin pitied him and responded further. Even if a three-year-old child knows this, even an 80-year-old person cannot practice it. This means that the words of the three-year-old child hit the mark. Thoroughly study these words. Even an 80-year-old person cannot practice it. Thoroughly investigate these words. So he's telling you that these words, both these phrases, are koan phrases to be thoroughly investigated and penetrated. They're not just expressions that convey some meaning. You know, koans are not just, we will look for the meaning of koan, but it isn't the meaning of the koan that makes it a koan. It's the transformative possibility for our lives that make it a koan. So he's saying that about these phrases. Don't just hear the phrase and know what it means. Really penetrate it fully and make it your own. Make it your own life. So the last few lines of the essay brings this point home fully. The child's expression is entrusted to you. It is not entrusted to the child. The old person's practice of the unattainable is entrusted to you. It is not entrusted to the old person. In other words, everything in the Dharma is about you. The Dharma, to study Dharma teachings is to study your biography. The biography you think is yours is just, that's your surface story, that's your cover story. But if you really want to know who you are and what your biography is, just study the Dharma, because that's going to tell you who you really are. So all this whole story, all this teaching, he's saying, is entrusted to you. It's yours. To understand, speak, and live in this way is the point of the Buddha Dharma. To understand, speak, and live in this way is the point of the Buddha Dharma. So we have learned that the practice of the three pure precepts, which are the gateway to the 10 clear mind precepts and come directly out of the three refuges, the practice of the three pure precepts is enough to do for a whole lifetime and many more. And there's so much more to it than we see and than we intend. And it's up to every one of us to live this teaching and understand it and share it with everybody the best that we can. That's what we're trying to do. And then the colophon, he presented this essay to the assembly of Kosho Horin Monastery in the Uji County, Yamashiro Province, in the harvest moon day of the eighth month in the year 1240. So this before he founded Eheiji. So that's my talk on that last part. Thank you for listening. I really appreciate it. So last week, I told you that I spoke with Anka, Rick Spencer. Had a wonderful last conversation with him, and he thought that he was soon leaving the world, but I thought, he sounds too good and too lively for that. And sure enough, he lived a couple more days, and he died on Monday morning, just after midnight, in Mexico City. So he's now gone. And I think some of you already know that this evening we would like to, with your permission, with your indulgence, and maybe some of you online who don't want to stay for this can take off. We want to do just a brief memorial service for Rick. I would like to do that. It would do me good. So we'll do that. And it'll be brief. It'll just be a Dharma statement, an incense offering, prostrations. We'll chant the Enmei Juku Kanagyo. There's a dedication, and we'll bow. And for those who have to sign off, just to say we open our practice period on Saturday. The Zendo opens at 10 here at the church in the other room. And we'll sit for till about noon, and we'll have a social lunch. We'll hang out. And then around 1 o'clock, we'll have our ceremonies to open the practice period. Then we'll have a little more zazen and the first Dharma talk of the practice period. In the morning are the No Kings protests that I know a lot of you want to go to, and that's really important to go to that. I have a friend who has this magical idea. He says that, and he read this somewhere, this is like some statistic that is not just magic, he knows this is true. The statistic says that when you have 3%, you probably heard of this, if 3% of a population is in protest, the government falls. So 3% is 11 million people, that's what he said. And so he said the first No Kings had 5 million, the second No Kings had 7 million. So when we get to 11 million, the government will change. So that's for those of you who don't like the government. Some people like it. I find that hard to imagine, but I can understand it. I read some of the things they say, and I get their arguments. But anyway, if you don't feel that way, go to the protest, because we have to get to 11 million, see if this magic actually works. But Saturday, we will be together. And those of us who are sitting, we'll sit, you know, in the same spirit. So you can come and sit with us, but you won't be one of the 11 million, I'm afraid. Okay. So we'll do the ceremony, but before we do the ceremony, Robin has some, I don't know exactly, but it sounds like these are some teachings from Rick, right? Yeah, now we need to give Robin the microphone. And after Robin is done, I'm going to call on Arhelia if she just wants to say hello and say some words.
The Rick Cedar Zen community up in Bellingham carried out a wonderful week-long sesshin every June. And it used to be a practice, at least my notes are from, actually they're Rick's notes, from 2010, just before we went to Japan. And what they used to do is during evening zazen, one of the teachers present would share, as people were sitting in quiet and looking at the wall, would share encouraging words to help kind of put that out. And I was known as kind of like spraying a beautiful aroma around and having people the opportunity to quietly breathe it in.
Can you folks online hear her? Yes. Okay. Good. Yeah.
Thank you. So what I have is one evening Rick gave these encouraging words in June of 2010, and I really enjoyed them, and I asked if he could share them, and he wrote them out on a little piece of paper. So do you want me to read that?
Yeah. Please read that. Yeah. So this is great. This is Rick's teaching.
Notes to self, now and again. Don't wait. Don't expect. Don't deny or reject. Don't regret. Don't believe your stories. Don't try to be respectable. Don't try to rebel. Don't try to be holy. And don't try to look holy either. Don't try to look good or smart or mean or happy or wise. Or serious, or clever, or different. Don't even try to let go. Trying would only get in the way. Just be present for this arising moment.
Oh, that's so great. Thank you for bringing that, Robin. And you also sent me a beautiful photograph of Rick on the Philosopher's Path in Kyoto.
When we were in Kyoto.
Put the mic up closer, yeah.
That it was recommended to me to take the Philosopher's Path, which runs along an edge of Kyoto. And so that was one of the outings Rick and I had while we were in Japan.
It was a beautiful photo. I couldn't print it, but it's a beautiful. Would you give those words to Laura, and maybe they can be posted on the website?
I'll send her
Good. That'd be great. That would be great. It's a wonderful teaching, right? It'd be nice to have that on our website. Yeah.
And Rick was forbearing so much ill health in recent years. He had an amputation of a finger because of a growth, and I don't really know the cause of his death.
Yeah.
But I think it was related to that.
It was a cancer. The finger was cancerous, and somehow, oddly, he said when he had the finger amputated that the doctor told him that it could very well metastasized to the lungs. It seems so bizarre, but that's exactly what happened. Yeah, and he had had very bad diabetes and had to have one of those meters. Yeah.
And he was with us in 2019 for the practice period at Tazahara.
Yeah.
He was one of the.
Yeah, the picture I brought is a picture of him and Neil sitting on the bench at Tazahara in 2019. Yeah.
Lovely man.
Yeah, wonderful person. Arhelia, do you want to say anything? You don't have to. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but if you do, you can unmute yourself and just say hi or whatever you want to say.
Hola from Mexico, and thank you, Norman, for doing this. I can see some familiar faces from the practice period at the Sahara in 2019.
Arhelia was there too in 2019.
My friends, yes, and I just want to say how grateful I am for having had the opportunity to spend time with Rick, and for it was an honor for me to also assist him during these past 2 months, which were very, very difficult for him. It was, I think I had the feeling he never said this, but I think his heart was broken when we got the diagnosis. Even though he tried his best to follow his doctor's instructions and he was positive, but he was feeling worse and worse every day. So at the end he said he lost the battle, and I didn't believe it because I saw how hard he fought. So thank you very much. I'm sad, but I am fine because I can see how much love he still is. So I think that's it. Thank you very much. Thank you.
I'm glad you could be here. Yeah. So now I just have to put on my Ocasa and we'll do the ceremony. I think